Welcome to the Lost Dot Podcast and the Trans-Pyrenees Race number 2, supported by our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.
I loved it, actually, the first time round. It was definitely one of the hardest things that I'd done, but it's just such a beautiful place to ride.
I mean, it's so difficult to know how things are going to unravel, but I think I've looked enough into the route to sort of know generally what to expect.
I remember from last time the proper sense of adventure, battling with the elements, always kind of feeling slightly on the edge, but that left such great and vivid memories.
I want to be in the finish line and know that there's nothing which I didn't do. Like, I want to give it all. I want to be at the finish line and know it couldn't have been better. So that is my biggest aspiration.
I'm Ian Broom, and this is the first of our daily episodes designed to keep you up to date with what's going on out in the mountains. Day one had it all. Rain, wind, sunshine, a north-south split, and splits within splits. I was in control car 1. We left control point 1 mid-afternoon and spent the rest of daylight following the leaders up parkour 2. A late night dash to control point 3 and some sketchy internet connection on the road means I leave you in the expert hands of TPR veterans Jim Stewart and Rachel Batt, who've been watching all the action from afar.
So to kick off, let's start with a summary of state of play on the road. So the riders have been active now for around 16 hours. All of the riders have passed through CP1 and our front runners are now over parkour 2 and on their way towards CP3, Os de Chivas and beyond.
So it was a bit of a damp start after a very wet day yesterday as well, but it has improved throughout the day. I always think it's a bit of a shame when it's wet at the start. You know it's likely to happen at some point in the race, so particularly at this sort of time of year, so you've always got the kit, or normally have the kit anyway, to deal with it, but it's a bit demoralising to start in these sorts of conditions. So yeah, that's a bit of a shame. But despite the rain, it was a very fast start, or perhaps because of the rain. Perhaps the rain motivated people to put their heads down. But several riders covered the 70k to Col d'Espigui at CP1 in under 3 hours.
So one of the really striking features of this year's race from the off has been the free route nature and how that's affected people's route choice. So there's been a really clear-cut north-south divide, there being the two prominent choices riders have made, trying to stay clear of the mountains for as long as possible and take the flatter roads toward the valleys. And so what we've seen kind of happen after CP1 is generally riders have gone to one of those two options and sort of then formed a pincer movement towards the start of parkour 2. But then even within that, there's been two or three variations of both the north and south routes, which has made for really interesting dot watching. Added in to that is the waves of start times for this particular race. So early doors, it's quite difficult to see who's actually leading. But as the race progresses, you get a bit more feel for how that's going to unfold. And certainly by the time we reach CP3 in the early hours, probably tomorrow for the fastest riders, we'll start to really see the race taking shape. But certainly there's been some interesting points on route choice already, and I'm sure there'll be more to come.
It's really cool that you can ride off in seemingly totally different directions and then more or less arrive at the same point at about the same time. This is one of the really great things about riding free route races. It can also be a really unnerving thing for a racer if you're a racer that keeps an eye on social media or the dot watching, you'll see all the other riders going off in different directions, and it can sort of rattle your brain a little bit, worrying that you've made the right route choices.
So looking then a bit more closely towards the front of the race and seeing how it's unfolded through the day. So at the head of the pack, we had James Loudon and Neil Phillips arriving at CP1. They were both credited with the same time, but started in different start waves, both coming in just under 3 hours for that first 70K of the route. Both of those riders then took the northern route stayed in France before heading south towards Parcours 2. But there were quite a lot of riders who then follows the southern route and head down towards, not quite two, but towards Pamplona into the valley in Spain. And one of those key riders, I think, is Alexander Kopp. He was pretty quick to CP1 as well, and he looks to be well ahead in the front pack of the field. But also Jana Kissenheimer has made a really great start to the race, and she's comfortably keeping up with that initial pace that she was setting to CP1.
Yeah, in the women's race, Jana took the southern route, and she arrived at Parcours 2 first. Simone Adair was just a few groups behind her, and both of them were riding really strongly overall. Going north, Lucy Hearn and Nicola Ray went really well on that route. And I think overall, more of the women went north than south.
In terms of the pairs race, we've got a few veterans coming back from TPR1. I think the first pair to CP1 was Ines and Isabel, Caps 150 A and B. They actually raced last time, as solo riders, but they've come back again this time to race as a pair. And another, the second place pair to reach CP1 was Paul Williams and Stephen Dalton. Again, their returning pair. But they've actually subsequently taken the lead in the pairs event. So they went along the southern route, and they seem to have made up some good ground in comparison to Ines and Isabel. And so they're now, as we speak, on Parcours 2, and Ines and Isabel are not far behind. One of the key things to note in the pairs field, which is really quite interesting, and it'd be good to see this unfold through the week, is how close they all are together. So there's only six pairs in the event, but they're all well within reach of each other, not that many kilometres separating them. And so it should be good to see how that unfolds over the next few days.
Yeah, I mean, it's perhaps interesting to note at this point in the race that it's the whole race is still quite compact. So while James Loudon is leading, the rest are pretty closely stacked behind him, and there wasn't much more than 20 to 30k between riders. This is likely to change quite a lot as we go into the night. But yeah, I mean, it is quite a compact race despite all the north-south divide on route choices. So we should note that last year's winner, Thomas Jacquelinet, isn't currently at the front of the race, which we were a bit surprised about, but we've heard that he was a bit under the weather this morning. So it'll be interesting to see if he makes up ground as the race progresses.
Yeah, and another big surprise for us was James Loudon. He's leading the race now, and he's putting in a phenomenal performance at an incredible pace. But he's not a rider that we'd heard of before. And we're informed from some of the media crew following the race on the ground that this is it's his first ultra distance event. And before today, the furthest he'd ridden was 220 kilometres in a single ride. But now, at the end of Parcours 2, he's comfortably completed nearly double that. And I think he potentially could go through the night as well. So who knows how far he'll ride today. It's going to be interesting to see how he gets on over the next few days and whether that fast pace is something that can be sustained.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see going forward through tonight what people's strategies are going to be. So some riders might push on into the night, others might stop. There are some gravel sections coming up, and nighttime gravel isn't everybody's cup of tea. Some riders might stay in hotels, some riders might be bivvying.
I think in terms of whether people choose to stop or not, I think we might find that some of the front runners could push on. Those who want to win this race outright might feel that if they're feeling fresh, they could you know, push ahead and try and gain an advantage on their competition. It's always interesting to see what people's sleep strategies are going to be, because of course, if you stop, you get that respite and a bit of recovery, and maybe that's going to help you push on harder the next day. But the opposite side of that is that you could gain that advantage while you're still going strong if you don't feel you need the sleep. So it's going to be interesting to see who does what. In terms of how the mid-pack might play this, I think a lot will depend on where they find themselves. If they're planning to use hotels, which is something that we've always found works best for us, then you're fairly tied by where the hotels might be. And there are only certain places where you'll find them, the bigger towns usually. So there's limited choice, and that often dictates how far you might ride in a day. I mean, for us, we've always found that hotels are the best option, certainly riding as a pair. It can be difficult to choose an appropriate bivvy spot that you're both comfortable with. And we generally prefer the quality of sleep, being able to wash ourselves and kit. We find that really helps in the long run with maintaining hygiene and just being able to ride further the next day as a result. I know that's not everybody's choice. A lot of people prefer the bivvy approach. It can be more flexible, but certainly on an event like this, and particularly after mixed weather through the day, I would be looking to stay in a hotel myself.
So that's a bit of a summary of today's activity so far, and we're going to have a bit of a chat now about riding in variable weather, as this has been a feature of the race so far, but is also a common feature of riding in the mountains.
Yeah, so riding in the rain can be pretty miserable at times on these events, particularly early doors when you sort of you're getting wet quickly and you know that you've got a long way to go. With rain tends to come discomfort. Once your shorts are wet, once your shoes are wet, your socks are wet, and you can't get them dry, you just increase the chances of ailments that are going to make your life difficult over the days to come. Certainly, we've experienced that in the past in previous events, and it's not great. If you can stay dry, then definitely the way to go. But certainly, with the way that races unfolded today, it looks like there's been a whole mixed bag of weather conditions for riders to contend with, and that throws up all kinds of different challenges.
Yeah, the rain can also make like conditions on the road interesting, shall we say. It can make descents a bit spicy, particularly if it hasn't rained for a while. The road surface can be quite a bit more slippery, and this can impact quite significantly on riders, because I mean, obviously, like, a slippy surface is bad, but it can impact on your speed and your like stress levels, because like if you've just done a long climb, you're looking forward to a nice cruisy descent perhaps, where you can just relax and let off steam and give your legs a bit of a rest. But while your legs still get the rest, I guess you're concentrating perhaps harder, just because you're dealing with the conditions. And also, I mean, if you've got sort of glasses on, I tend to ride in glasses sometimes, it can make it, it's difficult to work out whether to take them on or off or whatever. The rain also has quite a significant effect off-road, as you can probably imagine. I mean, something that's rideable, like on reasonably slim tyres, can be much less rideable after or during the rain.
Yeah, so certainly when you're dealing with big swings in temperature as well, one of the things that certainly affects riders is going to be how much more energy you burn trying to stay warm. And I think one of the things that riders are going to find in this event particularly is that whilst it might have been mild at times in the day, and certainly last time it was very warm often, at night in the mountains it gets very cold and the temperature swing can be pretty significant. So the last thing you want to do is start to get ill during an event and just make that worse. So trying to keep yourself warm is crucial, but the energy that actually requires is something that riders need to factor in when making sure they fuel themselves properly throughout the event. Another potential issue with sort of wet weather conditions is the potential to get sick from contaminated water bottles from spray on the roads. There's a lot of animals that are freely roaming the roads in the Pyrenees. You often hear them before you see them, particularly at night, because you'll find these fairly large horses with horse bells, I guess, rather than cowbells, around their neck. So you can hear them before you come around a corner. And of course, with animals on the road comes the waste as well. And that can make for a fairly nasty mix, especially when it sprays up onto the cap of your bottle and you subsequently drink from that for the rest of the day. So it's something that riders should be sort of wary of, I guess, as they deal with the conditions on the road.
I guess one of the things that can be really demoralising in the rain is if your sleep strategy is to bivvy, or perhaps your sleep strategy isn't necessarily to bivvy all the time, but you find yourself caught out and you can't get to a hotel. The rain can make bivvying options a little bit more limited because, I mean, you ideally want to be finding somewhere where you can be sheltered and get out the rain and possibly get out of your wet kit. But also you've got to pack it all up again in the morning. And if it's been very wet, then you're packing wet clothes, wet tent or bivvy bag or whatever system you use into your bags. And it's quite difficult to work out how to get that all dry again.
We've certainly learned the hard way about riding long distances, particularly in the rain, and riding back-to-back days in wet weather conditions. But also variable conditions through a day can make for challenging circumstances because, you've got wet kits that you need to dry, or you've got too many clothes on and you're too hot, and it can be really difficult to get that mix right. In previous events that we've done, we've resorted to hiding out in garages and begging kitchen staff for gloves that we can wear underneath, latex gloves that we can wear underneath our cycling gloves, or plastic bags that we can put inside our shoes. And it's not a situation that you really want to find yourself in. And I guess, we've come across these situations in events that we've ridden and other times that we've ridden. And it's taught us a lot about how to deal with those sorts of conditions. And we've really nailed our wet weather kit as a consequence of that. And I guess it all comes down to just making sure you're prepared. But ultimately, it's not really possible to have a fully waterproof setup that stays waterproof. Nothing is watertight entirely, and you've got to manage how that's going to work for you throughout a day's wet riding. And trying to stay dry for as long as possible is obviously great, but there comes a time when you're wet and you need to work out how you're going to deal with that. And as soon as you're able to, trying to dry that kit off again and get out of wet kit is a really important step, because you could get very cold very quickly in wet kit, and it could be just a miserable experience that you don't really want to be in.
Yeah, I noticed an amusing post from Thomas Jacqueline earlier where he'd posted pictures of his bike cockpit that he'd turned into a drying rack just to try and get some of his clothes dry in a sort of after the rain in the morning. But it's not all negative. I mean, yes, there's a lot of downsides to riding in variable conditions, but it can be really, really atmospheric and stunning. And when it stops and clears and you get all those low-lying wispy clouds and you get rainbows, it's really quite magical. So you've got to take the downs with the ups, I guess.
So another sort of key topic, probably worth a bit of discussion with regards to ultra racing, is pacing and the strategy that riders might go into an event with. A decision about whether to sort of start off slower and pace yourself for the duration, or to try and make the most of fresh legs early and go off hard. Sometimes it's not a conscious decision and you get carried away and you don't necessarily do the thing you intended to. So it's an interesting point to kind of explore a bit further.
Yeah, I mean, I think starting a race slow or fast is something that you kind of need to, well, there's lots of factors, but I guess in over-enthusiasm, you might head out too fast and burn out. We did this on TCR6, trying to stick to an unsustainable schedule. But I think that's an important thing to highlight. I mean, it's knowing yourself and knowing like what will work for you, whether to go out fast or whether to like to be very steady and keep a rein on your enthusiasm. I mean, on day one, for sure, you've got good energy levels and good legs. And it, in some ways, it makes sense to take advantage of that. I mean, we always find that as the days go on, you get less and less energetic. So even as we do staying in hotels where you get reasonable recovery, your ability to recover depletes. So it is useful to get the distance under your belt while you're fresh.
Yeah, and to sort of add to that, I guess, depending on how you're tackling the event as a whole, whether you're pushing for the fastest possible finish time or you're just trying to complete the event within the set time frame, that might also dictate which option you choose, because you could try and get those kilometers under your belt early doors when you feel fresh, but at the same time, if you know yourself well and you know you're going to be on the road for 6-7 days, you might want to just hold a little back so that you know you've still got enough left in the tank later on. Another reason to potentially sort of go faster or slower, try and stay on the bike longer or otherwise, is what the weather is actually doing. Sometimes it's worth taking a break if the rain is particularly bad or if the weather is particularly bad, and you could see that it's going to be short-lived and you know there's going to be a sort of nicer period coming up afterwards. You may be better off just taking that time to have some food, to get a little bit of respite from being on the bike, and just let that weather pass and then cycle in the better conditions afterwards. But equally, if you're sort of pushing towards a set target towards the end of the day, it might be best to try and stick it out and try and beat the rain or beat the incoming weather. And you just kind of need to be on top of the conditions and know what to expect, and keep kind of aware of your surroundings as the race progresses. One of the key things we found in the past, certainly that's dictated our pace, is whether we're going to make it in time for hotel reception opening hours or a resupply point that we had in mind, and whether we're going to make it before it shuts. And that can really, it's amazing how much more pace you can find if you know that you're going to miss spa by 5 minutes if you don't hurry up. And that can really have a big impact on your overall speed, and also how you feel the next day, whether you've dug that little bit deeper and really put that little bit extra in that perhaps you shouldn't have, and overall you may end up paying a price. But at the same time, if you don't make that resupply and you don't get what you need to fuel yourself for the next few days, that could be equally or if not more detrimental.
Sadly, we've got one scratch from the race to report today. Rider 143, William Scott Moncrief, unfortunately crashed and has broken some bones in his shoulder. Fortunately, he made it to hospital, but sadly, that's the end of his race. Of course, we wish him a very speedy recovery and hope that he comes back next year.
That's it for our first daily episode. Thanks to Jim and Rachel for taking us through what's been happening in the Pyrenees. If you have any questions you'd like us to tackle, send them to tpr@transcontinental.cc, and make sure you follow the TPR2 hashtag on Instagram and updates from our social media channels. Thank you to our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.